that one of the simplest ways to break through is just speak about the thing out loud, not to another person, sometimes to an inanimate object. That'll suffice. So we're going to ask today, does this work? And what's going on in our brains? And we explain to the duck, as the theory is named. And how can you use this strategy in your own life, whether you're writing, creating, IKEA, don't get me started on IKEA. I'm very bad at it. I've lost relationships over it. I can't handle a Jerry key. So to help us understand this concept and possibly even save my love life, Elliot Verroy, senior lecturer in the School of Computer Science at the University of Sydney, joins us on the line. Will this save future relationships, Elliot, now that I'll be able to potentially understand how to do IKEA furniture?
Maybe. Maybe if you use it as a form of therapy, straighten your ideas out and get the relationship strong. Maybe there's an avenue there.
I like it because I often talk things out, but I think my neighbours think that seven people live in my house because I do it in multiple different accents. You know, I might be, I'll be English one day, mate, then I'm an American talking out. But anyway, I digress. That's my own issues I have to resolve, preferably with professional assistance. But tell us about what this rubber duck debugging theory is and where it comes from.
Yes, this rubber duck debugging theory, it's making you look a little less crazy when you're putting on those seven different voices, because at least you're talking to something. it was brought up in this book, The Pragmatic Programmer, a long time, like 30-ish years ago. It's a bunch of short stories just kind of relating real-world concepts to programming and how we approach software engineering. And it just kind of took off. It sounds quirky. It sounds weird. It sounds like something nobody would have heard of. But you'll find that most programmers, software engineers, computer scientists have probably heard this or at least tried it themselves. It's this idea that we're writing code all the time. It's logic that flows onto more logic, and it's really easy to get lost and make a mistake. And it's hard to figure out where it's going wrong. So you pop this little rubber duck down on your desk and you just start explaining. You go through line by line. This is what I expect my code to do. This is the way I've done it. And sure enough, as you're going through those steps, you'll find, oh, wait a second, I'm supposed to be going from C to D here, but I'm not. I've skipped step D entirely. Just that kind of way of saying it out loud and structuring your thoughts just makes it so much easier to find the error.
Do we know why it works?
There's not a, you might be surprised, there's not a huge body of research into why a rubber duck works.
Yeah.
So it's mostly theorizing, but I can kind of put it down to a few things. I think one is that structuring of thought, organizing your ideas logically and then making it more clear where that logic breaks down. I think that helps a lot. I think having an inanimate object, a rubber duck, something that doesn't respond, I think helps a lot. If you're talking to a person, it can still help, but you're putting a little bit of faith or bias that they're going to jump in and fix the mistake for you.
Yeah.
And so you tend to go easy on the details. You don't sort the logic out as clearly. If it's a blank duck staring at you, you're forced a little more to do that.
Yeah.
I think the other big thing here is it's also kind of a form of teaching. You're explaining to the duck what's going on. You're kind of breaking it down into as simple parts as you can and explaining what those parts mean, what they're used for. And that kind of form of learning or form of understanding through teaching, that is something that has a big body of research.
Yes, I remember that was a big thing when I was at school. They'd try to encourage you to teach lessons because they've got the information to, stay in the brain a lot easier.
Yeah, absolutely. It's something I encourage with my students all the time. It helps you process the information. It puts a little bit of pressure on you because you don't want to stand up and explain something to somebody and look stupid. And you can't. You can't teach something by just regurgitating a sentence. If someone's got a question, you need to be able to break that down. And so I think this kind of plays into it as well when you're explaining it to a little rubber duck.
Yeah. No, it's funny because I know a lot of unis now, exams have moved online, and I guess that means that you there's no restrictions on talking as much because you don't have other people in the room. Do you recommend maybe if you're doing a difficult university exam, bringing some sort of inanimate object in and you can walk through the problems they present themselves?
Yeah, that's not a bad idea. I hadn't thought of that, actually. You might run into a few issues. A lot of the kind of remote testing that we do, you're on video, we're recording, and it might look a little suspicious if you're reading the questions out loud in your room. You might not get away with it, but it's a good idea. I mean, certainly for study, I'd recommend that, going through and kind of processing everything you learn out loud.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And does it have to be a rubber duck? Could you be other objects perhaps you feel more comfortable with? Or does the duck have certain benefits that other objects don't have?
I don't think it has to be a duck. I mean, maybe the little cute face looking up is a bit of a benefit, but I think something that isn't going to judge you helps. You can be open and free with it, any mistakes that you've made. I've used pets. You know, the dog sitting next to you as you might be working from home, always good to explain. Like I said, I think it helps a little bit to explain to somebody or something that doesn't have a good understanding. So I've also bounced ideas off family or friends,
yeah,
maybe that aren't programmers, still explain all of my code to them. They'll zone out and stop listening. Still helps me kind of get those thoughts out and process them.
You've got a friend in me if you want to chat code. I'm here for you. What about going back and forth with an AI bot? I do that sometimes these days with complicated things. Of course, it sometimes hallucinates, but I find that to be quite helpful. Is there any research on that?
Yeah, I think that's kind of a good next step for this. I think with good controls, it's the right way to do it. I think if you kind of just blanket approach, you know, ChatGPT with your question, you don't prompt it correctly, it's going to start making all these assumptions about your logic and what you're trying to do. But I think there's a way to prompt it to act a bit more like a rubber duck, but with some feedback, you know, jumping in when you are really stuck or not able to find the issue, but making sure that there's still that kind of process of putting your logic out there, going through step by step and making sure you find the correct error instead of, like you said, some sort of hallucination. There's also I haven't looked into it fully yet, but some very, very recent research, I think from MIT, looking at kind of brain scans of brain activity when using AI and chatbots in particular. And it was looking pretty poor for learning gains.
Oh, really?
Maybe we need to be very careful about how we use it and the way that we use it.
I think that's a big thing because I found myself using it a lot more as a crutch. And I have to show some discipline to not use it because it can be so easy.
Yeah, it alleviates a lot of that learning process. And I think AI is a phenomenal tool and it's going to grow and it's going to be, you know, everyone's going to need to know how to use it. But
yeah,
it's important, I think, to get that learning down first and then use it as a tool.
Yes.
Or at least use it in a very structured way to help you learn instead of just kind of doing all the hard work for you.
I think so, because sometimes I found these days I might not trust my own thought in the same way I used to, and I have to go and validate it via the chatbot. I don't know if you've experienced that at all.
Yeah, but then I'm doubting myself about whether the AI is correct as well.
Yeah, exactly.
I think I still find myself going, you know, returning back to Google and finding some forum post somewhere that's been stated a few different times in a few different places. Find enough sources, and I get a little more.
Yeah,
a little more confident in the answer. Still not fully trusting those chatbots yet.
Exactly, and then run it by the rubber duck. I think we need to start. We should be bringing this outside of the home and in public too, and we should normalise talking out our ideas out loud to inanimate objects on public transport and in bars and other places.
Yeah, look, everyone's got their AirPods in now. It doesn't matter if we're yapping away out loud.
That's right. They won't hear you. Do it on the bus. Bring a duck. Bring a teddy bear. Bring something.
Yeah, you can actually get away with it a lot easier these days. You don't look so crazy. People just think you're on the phone.
Exactly. Mate, thank you so much for making the time this morning. That was a great and I think very useful chat for a lot of people. So we very much appreciate it.
Yeah, of course. Hopefully it gets some rubber ducks into home so people can start using it.
I'm ordering rubber ducks to the studio right now.
Good on you.
Thanks, Elliot. Cheers. That's Elliot Verroy, Senior Lecturer in the School of Computer Science at the University of Sydney.